But I had an experience where I was, I'd listened to my niece had been the valedictorian at her high school graduation, and she gave a 5-minute talk on love people, and that means love yourself. And so the next day was Fast Sunday, and I just was thinking, as I heard the testimonies, thinking about that, and the testimony meeting was just so incredible. And I realized the only thing that was different between that and the thankamony and the other stuff was I had changed my perspective. I had changed the way that I was approaching testimony meeting, and I had a very different experience. And so it's not about me trying to preach to everybody else that you should be doing your testimonies this way. It's about me approaching testimony meeting, maybe a little bit, maybe humble is a way to think about it, that I'm at a level or a point on my path, and brother so-and-so who's given his talk is at a different point on his path, and he's doing the best that he can do, and I'm doing the best that I can do, and I have a whole lot of mistakes that I've made, and he's certainly imperfect in ways that I notice and other ways that I probably don't. And so the podcast is really just a way for me to explore my own connection with the church, with spirituality, and with the divine. Jesus land, if they live
righteously. It is time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and I'm excited in about an hour's worth of time as we look back on this to go, how was that? What did we do? Where do we go with this? There's lots of different sort of avenues or channels that we could talk about. Joining me is my guest, Ken Williams. Welcome in, sir.
Thank you so much.
Now you might know Ken as the owner and proprietor of the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. He yes. also, is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You wouldn't know it by the name of, his book, The Boss, Boss from Hell. Crap. What is
Surviving
it?
The Boss from Hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Surviving the Boss from Hell. It, if you really wanted to be on board with as far as religious stuff goes, it should have been Surviving the Boss from Heck. I would have really appreciated that.
My wife would have appreciated that more.
Oh, did you get in the doghouse for that?
I get it. Because whenever I talk about it, I'll do a Facebook post or whatever about Surviving the Boss from Hell. And she'll say, can you just not swear so much? Okay. So I mix it up a little bit. The bad boss, the tough boss, the difficult boss. But
I was really hoping that she said, can you really just not swear so damn much? And then you're like, wait a minute.
I would have said that, but I don't know that she would have said that.
So I want to get into all sorts of that kind of stuff, but give me just a quick overview of you and the church. What is that like? Born and raised, are you Utah and then Eastern bound? What's going on?
Utah, I was born in Utah.
Okay.
My parents and grandparents, members of the church, I have been a lifelong member, did all the things. I grew up in California, served a mission, Portugal for 2 years. Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh, Portugal. How was that? And have you been back?
I have been back. It was amazing and hard in the ways that you might or might not expect. I was really introverted, really introverted as a kid. And so my mission president would pull me aside and say things like, Elder, I need you to open your mouth. And that was one of the most terrifying things that I could even imagine. Mm-hmm. Sitting on the bus next to somebody and starting a conversation was just filled me with anxiety. And so it was hard in those ways, but amazing, amazing people, amazing food, amazing culture. I loved it. And I live in Indianapolis now. The Indianapolis Temple and the Lisbon, Portugal Temple were announced the same day.
Oh, wow.
And that was a magical day for me. It was beautiful. And as the Lisbon Temple was nearing its completion and the open house dates were announced, I told my wife, we were out for breakfast, and I said, I want to go to the open house. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, have fun with that, which sounded like permission. So I went. I did a weekend trip to Lisbon, and then a year later, took my youngest son, and we spent a couple weeks in Europe. And so I've been back a couple of times.
Wow. And Indy Temple is open now, too?
Yes.
Okay.
That's been open for since 2015, I think.
Okay.
So nine
and close.
Years
How do you like that blessing?
Well, it's 15 close-ish? Minutes away. Yeah, 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. What are you? Wasatch Front? Come on now.
It's like that. No, it's been fantastic. So we had been in the Louisville district, which is about 2.5 hours away, which was a blessing from Chicago because that was about 4 hours. Mm. And now 15 minutes has been wonderful.
And then talk to me a little bit about, because I think most people would hear the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast and they'd go, oh, that, okay. We've heard of that because at the end of all the episodes, we mm-hmm. list off those that are those level sponsors. But you and I, friends, before that, we had met before all of that, where I was able to enjoy and be a benefactor of the Chocolate Cake Bites, not necessarily the podcast itself. But tell people about it. I think it's a fantastic ministry and one that I think needs to be shared.
It is. I don't even know how it started. It has the short version of the story is.
You don't have to go the short version. We got time.
Well, I know, but I'll just kind of okay. I'll fill in the pieces. But almost every Sunday, I will make and share chocolate cake. That's the one sentence version. The way that I remember it starting was when I was in college, which was almost 80 years ago.
Okay.
There's this cake recipe that my mom would make. The recipe name was the John Hoosier cake, and it's just a Texas sheet cake. I don't know that there's anything special about the recipe, but I just loved this cake. Mm-hmm. And I would make it. I didn't know how to adjust recipes. And so for my wife and I had this 9x13 pan, which was way too much for the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so I would cut it up and I'd cover these paper plates with plastic wrap and take cake to neighbors and whoever I could find to get the cake delivered to. And I did that in college, but that was about it. And it didn't extend from there until several years later. I was, my wife was the compassionate service leader in the ward.
Okay.
And so she on a regular basis would be coordinating meals or babysitting or things like that. And I got home from work one day and she had been making chocolate chip cookies. Chocolate chip cookies are delicious.
Yes.
And hers are amazing. So I walked in and I picked a cookie up to sample it because that's part of the husband's responsibility.
Yeah. In fact, the mandate as it's like, till death do you part and do you promise to always have a chocolate chip cookie before anyone else gets one? I do.
If she missed that part of the vows, apparently.
Oh, no.
Because she literally slapped my hand mm-hmm. and said, those are not for you. Ooh. If they're not for me, who are they for? And she named a family in the ward and she said, they're for this family. And I said, what is going on that they get cookies that I don't get access to? And she said, her answer was so bizarre. It just didn't even, I couldn't process it. She said, I don't know. I just felt like they needed cookies. And she is so connected to the spirit that I didn't doubt that, but also it didn't make sense to me. And so I just let it go. Okay, I guess I don't get cookies this time. And then it was sometime later, I got home from work. It's date night. We're getting ready to go out. And she had been, she'd taken some canning jars, mason jars, and filled them up with some black-eyed Susan flowers from the front garden. Mm-hmm. Little ribbon tied around the neck. And they just looked really cool. And I said, oh, cool flowers. Who are they for? She had six jars. And she said, I don't know. What is going on? Mm-hmm. And she said, there's a sister in the ward. Her mother just passed away. So I think we'll take a jar over to her and the rest, I don't know. Okay. So it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But it's date night. So I'm going with her. And we dropped the flowers off at the one sister's house. And she turned to me and she said, now where? And the thing that was interesting to me, I don't understand why I was so afraid to say anything, but there was a family name that popped into my head. It was one of my home teaching families.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know. I don't know where to go next. And so I didn't have the confidence to tell her that there's a family name that popped into my head. And she said, let's go visit this family. And it was the same family. It was my mm-hmm. home teaching family. She named the same family I'd been thinking about. And I said, okay, that sounds good. So we get there and they're in a neighborhood that had construction going on. And as we pull up to their house, she's sitting on the front porch, the wife is, and the husband is in the driveway taking bricks and bags of concrete off of a wooden skid, a pallet mm-hmm. that had been left by some construction company. Nobody would take ownership of it, but it was in the middle of the driveway. In the middle of the driveway, so they couldn't get cars in and out of the garage.
Jeez.
And he was so angry that he had this construction debris that he had to deal with. And so I'm the home teacher. I go up and I said, hey, let me help you with that. No, don't worry about it. My wife goes to his wife and hands her the flowers. They have their chat and we have our little chat and we get the pallet moved. And I started to pick up on the fact that there were times that a name could pop into my head and I could find a way to minister to them without me even knowing what was going on. Mm-hmm. I was a seminary teacher. Well, let me back up just a little bit. I was the stake young men's president and I was counseling with the young men's president in one of the wards, and he was just frustrated in his calling. He didn't like the calling. He was convinced that the only reason he had the calling was because nobody else would do it. And that may be true. I don't know. He had a small program. There were only seven boys in his young men's organization.
Which sounds perfect. I know that people are always about the big numbers, but doesn't it sound perfect to have like your stewardship be five people?
Right. Because two of them were his boys.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, two people. Like, I feel like I could serve the heck out of less than a double digit amount of people, depending on what it is.
So two of them were his own boys.
Okay.
So he had the five plus his own two, and he just hated it. And as I'm counseling with him, I had this thought come to mind that I knew wasn't mine because I wasn't smart enough to come up with that. And I said, would you do me a favor? And he said, yeah, I guess. I said, would you pray for your boys by name every day? Just do it for a week. I just want to see how that works out for you. Yeah, I guess I will. And the impact of that thought, I have no idea what an impact it had on him, but the impact on me was that's powerful to have that kind of an intimate connection with the people that I serve, that I minister to, that I have stewardship over. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that. So I had, I think, nine units. So nine young men's presidents, and I would pray for them by name every day.
Oh.
And shortly after that, I was released and I was called as a seminary teacher. So I continued that. And I had about 19 students and I would pray for them by name every day. And it wasn't anything extravagant. It wasn't anything spectacular. It was, Heavenly Father, please bless Joey. Please bless Ashley. Please bless Naoto. Please bless. And it was just, I was in my mind going in the semicircle and just asking for a blessing on each person that where they normally sat. And the thing that got really interesting was it didn't happen every day, but there were times that it was like hitting a speed bump. And I would say a name and I thought it was like it would just catch in my mind. Okay, I got to pay attention to that one. Hmm. And there was a time that I was driving home from a fireside. They had leftover cookies and brownies. And so, of course, I had to grab some of those. And as I was driving home, I instinctively turned the wrong way. It was not a thought that I should go visit one of my students. It was, I just turned. Mm-hmm. And I went to her house and I knocked on the door and it was just a porch conversation, very short, but I handed her a plate of cookies and told her, hey, just wanted you to know I was thinking about you. That was it. And it was a day or two later, she came up to me in class. She said, Brother Williams, thank you so much for those cookies. That's exactly what I needed. Well, that caused a flashback to the chocolate chip cookies that my wife gave to the family in the ward. About 3 weeks later, after she had given those cookies, that family had called us, left a voicemail for us saying, thank you so much for those cookies. That's exactly what we needed. And so I'm starting to put things together that how is it possible that cookies can be something that people need? And then I'm realizing that with the flowers that we took over to the home teaching family, that just because I had this thought, we go to this house and they're in need. There's something going on where I'm able to serve. So I thought, well, I can do this. I can share my extra treats. My birthday's in November and I used to go to Costco and get their huge chocolate cake. It's rich. It's dense. It was delicious. And I would have my couple pieces for birthday celebrations. And then I had 3/4 of a cake. And my wife said, you've got to get rid of this. I do not want it in the house. And it's going to go bad if we don't do something with it soon.
You're like, so I'm eating it as fast as I can. There must be some other thing we can do. All right, I'll give it away.
So there were a handful of people in the ward. I knew they loved chocolate cake. And so I would cut chunks and wrap it up and go deliver cake. And it was just such a fun experience. Because then we could bond over chocolate cake. And there was one time I was going to a family, large family, and I knew they liked cake, and so I had a big chunk. They had like 82 kids, and just I get to the house Sunday evening, knock on the door, and there's no answer. But I know they're home because I can hear movement, I can see shadows. I know they're home, so I knock harder, and I get this prompting that this impression, you need to go visit your home teaching family. And I thought, okay, I will. I'll go as soon as I deliver this cake. I'm going to go visit my home teaching family, which was in the same neighborhood, same family that I had helped with the construction debris. So I knocked harder. And again, there's no answer. And I get this repeat of the prompting, you need to go visit your home teaching family. And I thought, yeah, I know. I'm going to go there. Let me just take care of this. And I call them. I call to say, hey, I'm standing at your door. And there's no answer. And I know they're home. And I get this
And then
third.
the police come. No, I'm teasing.
I get this third prompting that you need to go visit your home teaching family. And I thought, oh, you mean now, not later. So I pull away, I go to the home teaching family, and I walk up and just trying to break the awkwardness that I felt. As the wife opens the door, I hand her this plate of chocolate cake, and I said, the spirit said I should bring you this chocolate cake. And so she takes it and she sets it aside like she's not even paying attention to what I just said or gave her. And she said, I'm so glad you're here. Our infant son is sick. Would you help give him a blessing?
Wow.
And I said, absolutely. Absolutely. I would be honored to help give a blessing. And so it's starting to come together that when that prompting comes into my mind, if I act on it, good things happen. And so I have been doing this for a lot of years. I've done some calculations that's, I've shared thousands of chocolate cakes. And there's one time that, for example, new family moves into the ward. And my son and I helped him move 2 days later. It's Sunday. And so I'm asking him, who should we share chocolate cake with? The question that I like to ask my kids is, who do you know who needs chocolate cake? And so I asked him, and we debate on some different names. And I usually would make, I went from taking my 9x13, cutting it up and putting it onto plates and wrapping it up, and that's a gooey mess. And then I found these smaller cake pans, which were fantastic. I found even smaller cake pans, which are almost single serving, one or two people. It's great. It's a 1 pound cake pan that I get on Amazon. And so we go visit this family, brand new in the ward. They just had their first Sunday in our ward. We sit with them and they invite us in. We have this great conversation and get to know them. It was wonderful. It was an enjoyable visit. There have been times I knock on the door and they stand there and, hey, thanks for stopping by. I give them the cake. That's a doorway conversation. There's nothing more to that. I have zero expectation when I go, other than I'm just here to share some chocolate cake. I was thinking about you, thought I'd bring you some chocolate cake. Well, I was sharing my experience, how I do the chocolate cake thing at girls' camp a few years ago. And there was one of the leaders who came up and she said, do you remember when you brought me chocolate cake? And it was that family that had just moved in. And we brought the cake 2 days later. And I said, yeah, I remember that. It was such a great visit. She said, that was the worst weekend of my life.
Oh, geez.
I thought, oh no, what did I do?
The cake, what? It wasn't, did I not cook it long enough? Gooey in the middle, there's nothing worse.
So they had just moved into the ward, had no friends, no contacts, no relationships outside of her brother had helped him move, and it was just the two of them. And I think they had a daughter as well. But she was in the middle of a serious medical complication that just was so hard for her to deal with. And then we show up with chocolate cake just because. And I have gotten story after story like that where people have said, you showed up just right when I needed you to. So I love this idea that I was ministering, still home teaching back then, but home teaching a sister with my wife, and we're on our way home, and I asked my wife, is it okay if we make a detour? And she said, yeah, sure. So we go to a family in the ward. I said, I just saw them at church today, and it just struck me that they probably need some chocolate cake. And she said, did you know that it's her birthday today? I said, I had no idea, but we just showed up. It was her birthday, and it was just a great visit. And now I try to create as much havoc as I can with their kids. They've got five kids, and so I will give one of them a cake. I do one for each of their birthdays, but sometimes just randomly I'll give one of them a cake, and I tell them that you don't have to share this with anybody. And then I go to their
Jeez.
dad, who's the bishop, and I say, sorry, I just created some family drama. But it's been a lot of fun, and seeing how it kind of a spread. I was sharing this one time with the youth, and whenever I do, I tell people that the spirit may tell you that Brother Williams needs chocolate cake, and he probably does. So you probably should share it with them. And that's just my greedy way of getting treats.
Getting some cake back.
Absolutely. So I was out doing some errands on a Saturday afternoon, and I come back, and there's this whole 9x13 pan that somebody had dropped off for me with a big chunk taken out. And this is one of the priests in the ward. And there's a note that he said, Brother Williams, I was thinking, who needs chocolate cake? And your name came to my mind. And I thought you probably do. But before I could leave, my dad said that you would want to share with him. And so he took.
That's great.
It was so funny. It was such a great. And of course, I called his dad and I said, of course, I would share with you. I love to share chocolate cake. And so he laughed and he said, I told him you'd want to share with me. And then I was a high counselor of a ward, and some of the kids in the ward knew I was doing this. And so they came up to me, and there were two sisters. Their both birthdays were both in September. And so they both came to me, Brother Williams, our birthday's next month. Don't forget our birthday's next month.
Yeah.
And so when I bring their cakes in, I took a big chunk. I found out that their dad's birthday was also in September. So I took a big chunk out of each of their cakes to give to their dad. And so one of the girls was 14. And if you know anything about 14-year-olds, they're not always focused on others.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that about teenagers. Go on.
So I handed her the cake and she was so excited. Thanks so much for my birthday cake. And I said, your dad thanks you for sharing with him. And she said, she gave me the finger wag. And she said, no, I'm trying to get in the camera. Mm-hmm. No, I am not sharing with my dad. I said, too late. You are, but okay. She said, no, I'm not. I'd already done it. It's too late. She's not, she doesn't have any choice in the matter. So I've had a lot of fun with it. It has been so rewarding. I don't do it because people are going to come to me and tell me how wonderful it was, but it's become a personal ministry. And it's been a lot of fun. I was at a training. The General Sunday School Presidency came out to Indianapolis area and did some training. And this is several years ago. It was Brother Durant who was in the presidency at the time. And he had written an article that was in the Inside about sharing about chocolate cake. It was a little bit of a different approach, but he had chocolate cupcakes that he was going to share. And had an object lesson about sharing the sweet message of the gospel. And in this congregation of 300 people, he couldn't give away these chocolate cupcakes. And people were a little bit shy about taking cupcakes, but he asked, and I thought, I've got a reputation. He asked who wants a cupcake, and nobody raised their hand. There was a sister in the front, and so she got her cupcakes. And so I raised my hand and he gave me a couple cupcakes, and he went on with his message and then was trying to make the point that we have this sweet message that we don't always share. And so he asked the two of us, did you share your cupcakes? Because he gave each one of us two. Mm-hmm. And I was the stake Sunday school president. And I turned to my presidency and I said, do you guys want one of these cupcakes? Because I really did not want two cupcakes. And they declined. But as he's making his point, it almost was a chastisement that we have this sweet goodness that we don't share. And there's a man in the group who had been our high counselor for years, and he knew about the chocolate cake I'd shared with his family many times. And he got up and he felt like he had to defend me, which was embarrassing, but it was also just fun to watch because he knew what I do with cake and how I feel about it. And to have somebody giving me a little tap on the hand that, hey, maybe you should be doing a little bit more. So this guy, I love this man, Lance, stands up and he said, I need a microphone over here. So he gets the microphone. He says, do you have any idea what this man does with chocolate cake? And I thought, please no. He said, so he gives the two sentence version. He says, this man shares chocolate cake with people every week. And my family's been a bit of, so he just talks about how great that's been. I had an experience with, actually, I gave his son, who was 11 at the time, a cake one time. And I said, I'm going to give you a second cake, but it's not for you. You have this one for you. But the second one, I want you to share with somebody else. I want him to have that same experience. And he had a wonderful experience. So as this man is defending me, he says, "You have no idea what this man does with cake." And then he turned to this congregation of 300 or so people, and he said, "If any of you have ever gotten a chocolate cake from Brother Williams, please stand up." And I thought, "No, please don't
please
stand
don't
up.
Do this. Please. I appreciate what's going on right now, but abort. Stop." Okay.
Because I'm looking around thinking there are four people. There's not that many. But there were dozens of people that I had forgotten that I'd shared cake with. And it really was a significant reminder to me of the impact that what seems like a small act, what seems like an insignificant act, really can have on people. And there were people that I'd forgotten that, oh, that's right. When we were in the same ward, I remember taking cake for her birthday. Oh, that's right. I remember when I visited their ward, I took them some cake. And like I said, I don't do this because I get the attaboys or the congratulations or anything like that. I do it because it's just so much fun. It's a good cake too, but it's so much fun, and it works with anything. It doesn't have to be chocolate cake. It works with my brother does chocolate chip cookies. And a guy in my stake does zucchini bread. And Sean Rapier, who you know as well, he said that a sister in his ward heard a podcast that I did with him. And she doesn't do baking, but she does dishcloths. And so she shared dishcloths with him. And so it can be anything at all that your talents allow. It's as I've grown into this, it's about hearing the voice of the Spirit and acting on it. And it's so rewarding. And if I get no feedback from anybody saying, "Hey, that was amazing," that's fine. I know the cake is good, so I don't have to have somebody tell me how amazing it is. But it feels so great sharing. And some of the best experiences are when I'm a little bit nervous because this is somebody new. I don't know how they're going to receive this. Maybe it's somebody new in the ward. And it's been a great way for me to connect with people. And I can't imagine stopping.
Yeah.
So there's my story.
I want to take a quick break. When we come back in the second block, I want to kind of expound that a little bit and then also tell people what the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast would sound like in reference to all of what we just heard. And then in the third block, maybe if we got the time, you are a coach for folks about surviving the boss from hell. And we may turn that on its head and talk about if you got church leadership from hack.
Sure.
So we'll get to that coming back in the second and third blocks of the Cultural Hall. BestDJInUtah.com is the website. That is where you go if you would like me to come and DJ your event. Now, will I do a family reunion where you all wear the same t-shirts? You bet I will. Will I travel to wherever you're at? Uh-huh. Am I reasonable as far as what I cost? Yes. Yes. Do I bring a good time? Yeah, all the things. Listen, Best DJ in Utah, it's my company. It's a thing I do that allows me to be able to have the time to do the Cultural Hall. So if someone's getting married, you think, man, they need a great DJ. You're throwing a party, whether it's a 50th or 60th or 40th or 20th or whatever the party is. I've done them all and would love to be able to do that. An anniversary party, certainly done those. I did a baptism in 2023. Yeah, we did a big dance party at a baptism. Spoiler, not a Mormon baptism, but it was fun nonetheless. BestDJInUtah.com is a website. I will get back to you within 24 hours with a quote. Come on now. BestDJInUtah.com.
Hi friends, Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. You can get a brand new PC Laptops desktop and they start at only $29 a month. And it comes with a lifetime warranty. Just check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com.
Here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, remember you can become a Patreon saint of the Cultural Hall. Go to patreon.com/theCultural Hall. It is where you get early access to all of our episodes. You have great conversations. You get things from me that I say things like, do we like this? Should I still keep doing this? What are we doing? That is the secret but not sacred Facebook group that you get to be a part of. Go to patreon.com/theCultural Hall. It strikes me as you're telling me about the chocolate cake. It's not cake at all. I don't want to be like dismissive of it. As you indicated, though, it's not cake. There's nothing magical about cake. Although,
right,
as a recipient of your cake, and I'll be honest with you, because you also brought my wife a gluten-free cake.
That's true.
And you know, you're not from Utah, and you specifically made sure to include her in it. And had something for her. I know that it was a significant impact for her.
Well, good.
That she's mentioned a couple times, why hasn't he sent any more? But that's an aside. No,
because you moved, Richie.
Yeah, I know, but I'm still in the same city. Come see me. No, but it was significant to her, and she has a nose for, and I would imagine that some of the thing that intimidates people from doing this or some other sort of ministry is that she has a great nose for things like phoniness, or if they're mm-hmm. trying to do it for an attaboy or a project or a, well, I don't care if you don't like cake, I give cake. Like, that's very much not doing it for the right reason. And I think it's just connection. That's why I would imagine it's so successful, right? In a day and in an age where we're more disconnected, ironically, than we ever have been, just having someone go, I mean, it would feel awkward. And I think the cake or zucchini bread or whatever kind of gives you that permission where it's like, I wasn't just thinking about you and caring about you. That would be weird. Have a something so that I can be like, oh, I just wanted to give this to you. But it really is just like caring for another person.
So a couple things that I'm going to throw out. First of all, the gluten-free version of this is good. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of gluten-free food. I've got a couple siblings that have eliminated gluten, and I'll share the gluten-free version. I've got family members who are vegan and gluten-free, and I've done gluten-free vegan version of this, and surprisingly it's not nearly as good, but it's good.
Sure.
So I had and it is all about, it's all, I think, something that if we could just eliminate the pretense, that just be okay with connecting with people, being I don't want to say being vulnerable, because that sounds very I don't know, woo-woo maybe, but it's okay to act on promptings of the Spirit. It's okay to be connected with somebody and just let them know, hey, I'm thinking about you. I was one of the early adopters for COVID. So April, a couple years ago, I guess, what is that?
It's four years ago now.
So I felt fine. I had a fever for a couple of hours and then lost my taste. And so it didn't put me out, but I couldn't go to work. And my ministering brother had texted me one morning. I worked at FedEx at the time, worked overnight. And so he texted me about 6 a.m, hey, just thinking about you. You coming home from work about now? And I said, well, funny story, they're not letting me work right now because I have COVID. And he went right into ministering mode. And he said, what do you need? And I said, well, I can't. My wife was, she is a nurse. She was working at a facility in their COVID wing. And so she was working crazy long hours. And so I was the one who was taking care of things at the house as far as doing laundry and doing the cooking and things like that. But I didn't feel right about going to the grocery store. And I said, we're low on milk. Could you please get us some milk? And he said, yeah, absolutely. So he texted me from the store, what else do you need? I said, well, I probably could use some eggs and maybe some orange juice. And he comes back with a gallon or two of milk and a couple gallons of orange juice. And he had some treats for the kids. And then a box of 5 dozen eggs. I don't need 5 dozen eggs. We don't go through that many eggs. There were 4 of us at home, and he insists that that's all they had was the box of 5 dozen. So a couple of months later, when he was sick with COVID, I texted him and I said, okay, what do you need and how many dozen eggs?
Yeah.
And he said, I can't digest eggs unless they're in cake form. And so it's given me some inside jokes with people, but I've done some calculations with the size cake pan that I use. It's going to take 280 cakes to repay 5 dozen eggs.
Wow.
So for for birthdays, for just because, for, he's now my elders quorum president, for just whenever I feel like it, I'll give him a cake and tell him I'm still working off this 280 cakes. And he insists that I've already paid it off. But it's created for me so much joy. And I've shared the idea. There have been times that when I'm teaching elders quorum, I'll bring cakes and we'll talk about service. And I'll say, I've got cakes and these are not for you. These are for you to share. And I want them to have the same kind of experience.
Yeah. So what's the podcast? What is that? Is it people that have received a cake? What or it's here? I'm going to interview you now. Go forth and cake.
So it is. I have found so much joy in just sharing these sweet nuggets of cake that there are also sweet nuggets of the gospel that have brought me a lot of joy. So it's usually either me with my own thoughts or with Sometimes I've had people on. My sister is my regular co-host, and we'll just talk about elements of the gospel that either we're trying to work through or that bring us joy. The one that I recorded yesterday that'll come out this coming Friday is about making decisions. And I just had a thought. Actually, there was something that I heard from somebody about making decisions. I have some help. I don't know if you can.
For those that aren't watching the video, we've got a cat. We've got a cat who's made their way into the interview. Perfectly fine. Beautiful cat.
That's right. She likes to help me out. And she'll do this for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then she'll go take a nap.
I have to ask you, did you just say help me out?
Almost.
About decisions.
That's right. So decisions, I was coaching somebody recently who said, it takes me a long time to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is a member of the church. And I know that a lot of times we make decisions prayerfully. And so I heard somebody say the other day, if we pray about a decision and we're waiting for an answer, are we expecting God to decide for us? And that was just a thought that I'd never considered that way. And so I reached out to my sister and I said, tell me your thoughts on this. And so we'll probably record an episode about how does our own stewardship for our own lives intersect with my dad's favorite scripture, which was Alma 37:37, counsel with the Lord in all thy doings. Mm-hmm. What is the expectation that we have of God? And is it okay for us to make a decision on our own? And what does it mean to counsel? And what does it mean to decide for ourselves? So it's just, it's things like that. And it's sometimes it'll be, I guess she would call herself neurodivergent. She had a brain tumor. It was benign a few years ago. Mm-hmm. It's changed a lot of things. It's changed a lot of ways that she can interact socially and taste things. And so we talk about, from my perspective growing up, and I've got I'd call it a traditional experience in the church. And from her perspective, we had the same parents, but her experience was a little bit different. And especially now, what does it mean when we talked about reverence one time? What does it mean to be reverent? And I remember growing up, things like the primary children standing in the front of the chapel with the reverence sash. And reverence meant closing your mouth and don't get your phone out, which we didn't have back then. But can you be on your phone and be reverent? Is it inappropriate to be on your phone during sacrament meeting? And so we talk about things like that. And sometimes we're pushing the boundaries from what I consider the traditional Latter-day Saint experience. But there are times that I've realized, one example is testimonies. I have been very critical of testimonies in my own head, that people get up and they'll do their thankimonies or their travelogues or whatever. And I have thought, you don't understand what this is all supposed to be about. And then as I was recording this podcast, I started to realize as we were talking that I'm the one who's not approaching things the right way. It's not because brother so-and-so comes up and he's given the talk that nobody's asked him to give, but he's where he is.
It took me a second. I'm sorry. I'm like, but oh yeah. Yeah. No.
Have you heard those before?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, the bishopric hasn't asked me to talk about, family history this month, so I'm gonna get up and tell you that you need to be doing more.
You can't go anywhere, sure.
So but I had an experience where I was I'd listened to my niece had been the valedictorian at her high school graduation, and she gave a 5-minute talk on love people, and that means love yourself. And so the next day was Fast Sunday, and I just was thinking, as I heard the testimonies, thinking about that, and the testimony meeting was just so incredible. And I realized the only thing that was different between that and the thankimony and the other stuff was I had changed my perspective. I had changed the way that I was approaching testimony meeting, and I had a very different experience. And so it's not about me trying to preach to everybody else that you should be doing your testimonies this way. It's about me approaching testimony meeting, maybe a little bit... maybe humble is a way to think about it, that I'm at a level or a point on my path, and brother so-and-so who's given his talk is at a different point on his path, and he's doing the best that he can do, and I'm doing the best that I can do, and I have a lot of mistakes that I've made, and he's certainly imperfect in ways that I notice and other ways that I probably don't. And so the podcast is really just a way for me to explore my own connection with the church, with spirituality, and with the divine. That was a very long answer to what could have been a very short question.
Listen, let me ask you this, for whatever reason, impressed to ask you this question. You said the recipe is your mom's.
Yeah.
So if you're having the opportunity to connect with these people, is it also a thought about your mom, who she is, what she raised inside you? Like, what? Give me some thoughts around your mom as far as how that is integrated into this. Or is it?
So I didn't expect to feel the feelings that I'm thinking about. My mom is one of the most incredible people I know. And she's a traditional Latter-day Saint woman who thinks that she hasn't done enough. Hmm. And, of course, knows all of her flaws. As we record this, this coming Sunday marks the 6-year anniversary that my dad had a stroke, pretty debilitating stroke. And she was his caretaker to a large, he wasn't able to live at home, but she was a constant companion. She visited him nearly every day and just was a perfect example of strength and support through his good times and bad, as he passed away in December, but through his final decline, she was just so dedicated to him. And so absolutely, it's not something that I necessarily think about every time, but she absolutely is a source of strength that I honor and that I have, that I deeply love and respect. And so I can't claim the recipe as my own. I have made a couple modifications. I go really heavy on the buttermilk.
Sure.
Because that's the better way to go.
Yeah.
But it's, but I can't call it any other recipe. It's my mom's recipe. And so I have it, it's in the book. I have a book called The Chocolate Cake Phenomenon where I talk about my experience and the recipe's in there. And I call it Ken's mom's chocolate cake.
So another question that I think I and maybe others would have as well. We want to do this. Maybe we're not cake people or cookie people. You know, maybe we've got something else. We make something. We're woodworkers. Mm-hmm. Again, the thing doesn't matter. I think it.
Right.
I think the thing is that it sort of does give you that. Excuse is not the right word, but it sort of emboldens you to go like, listen, even if they don't want to talk to me, they're still going to get a cool this. And I think that's valid. I think that people want to do this. And I think that there's a part of it too, where people go, yeah, but I don't know. Right. Or like, am I making the person's need up? Am I projecting the spirit? How do I know it's a spirit? Blah, 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 blah. For someone that is listening to this and is like, yeah, you know what? I don't know what my thing might be. I want to connect more. How would you say that they should start into something like this, or put a different way? How do they know that it's the spirit and not last night's pizza telling them?
Well, last night's pizza might tell them a different story, but
right.
There's a message that I think it was BYU devotional. It was Lauren Dalton, and he talks about how do I know if it's the spirit? How do I know if I'm receiving revelation? Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we don't know. We think I hear this question a lot. How do I know if it's the spirit or if it's my own thoughts? And number one, in the Book of Mormon, it says that if it's something good, it comes from God. Chocolate cake, obviously good. Mm-hmm. If there's an impression that I get to share chocolate cake with somebody or to share anything good, that comes from God. And so Brother Dalton talks about first thoughts and second thoughts. The first thought is to do something good. The second thought is, well, why should I? That's what talks us out of it. So go with the first thought. And so one of the things that I've been doing is I've been trying to every day, at least one time a day, send a thoughtful message to somebody. Now that could be email, it could be text, it could be phone call, it could be in person. But there are days, I do this at church sometimes, where I'll just, as I look around the congregation, I'll just consider the question, who do I need to notice today? And maybe that's a simple prayer. Heavenly Father, who do I need to notice today? And sometimes a name will come to mind, sometimes not. But as I have thought about who do I need to notice today, or who can I send a message to, or who do I need to recognize today? I've had a couple times where somebody that I'd not been thinking about, their name pops into my mind. And I just shoot them a text. Hey, just want to let you know I was thinking about you today. Hope things are going well. Mm-hmm. And there have been a couple times. I got a response back from a guy the other day that said, thanks so much. That means so much to me. And that for me is, it's not about me. It's just a reminder that that thought that I had, that was divine. That was a thought from the Spirit. I had another one where we ended up having a really good back and forth text discussion where he opened up about a few things and I shared some things. And it was, as you act on those things, for me anyways, it becomes clear that the thought wasn't just my thought. It was a thought for somebody else. One of the things that my wife does is as she is looking at Instagram or whatever, and she sees quotes, she'll think of people that, oh, this would be really good for this person. And she's got a network of people that she just sends thoughts to. And one of them is our server at the restaurant. And one of them is the parents of our kids' friends and whoever it is. And it's so frequent that she'll get a response saying, that's exactly what I needed today. And so I think we can put ourselves in a position to receive those promptings. And the simple question is, who do I need to notice today? Or who do I know who needs chocolate cake? Or who is it that this message would benefit? And it doesn't have to be anything. Maybe as you're, I've got a friend who makes sourdough bread, and he started doing bread like I do cakes. So every week he's delivering bread to somebody, which, and it's great because I'm a recipient of that as well. But it's just thinking about, as you're making cookies, you may have the thought, I should take some cookies to the neighbor. Or as you're, making, it doesn't have to be food. It could be as you're doing anything, you may have the thought. You may be at the grocery store. My wife one time was at the grocery store and she saw a little bouquet of flowers on clearance. And she thought, I'm just going to get those because we may know somebody who needs flowers. And she goes to my daughter and said, who do you know who needs flowers? And she said, you know, somebody in my class, I think she needs flowers. And then that young woman gets up in testimony meeting a few weeks later. And she said, I just want you to know that I know God knows me because I was going through this difficult time. And this girl in my class comes up and brings me flowers. And so the purpose isn't to be that kind of an impact on somebody. The purpose is to learn to hear the voice of the Spirit and to act on it. And I think this is Gospel Ken 1.1 or something like that. I think that as God sees that we're acting on these promptings, there are times that he kind of opens up the doors and lets us discover the impact that we're having, that, and that gives us the motivation maybe to help us continue.
I want to take a break here in a second. Although I did think this, I was like, what would I do? And if I ever move to the Indianapolis area, I think my thing will, I'll do insulin shots. I'll bring insulin shots to everyone that is affected by the bread and cake phenomenon so that we can all just be nice and balanced. Hey, I thought maybe you would need an extra dose of insulin, and I just follow you and the bread guy around. I just
there go you
to
go.
People. It's a double dose. When we come back in the third block, you professionally are a coach, a life coach. We'll talk very briefly about that because we only got a couple minutes as we'll go into the third block plus the three questions that we ask everyone. But we're going to talk about surviving the boss / bishop from heck. You say hell, but I'll say heck because I think it's funnier. We'll come back and do that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Here in the third block of the Cultural Hall, excited to be able to talk about something. We don't often really talk about sort of this self-improvement in this secular way or the, you know, a lot of that stuff. We keep most things in some way religiously connected, though I think that this is connected. You are a life coach. You've done the training, the certified life school of training, which I know for a lot of people, they go, well, anyone can be a life coach, but you have the certificate from the life coach school.
That's true.
And you help people survive the boss from hell. So I would hope, and we only, like I say, got a couple minutes. So I apologize that we didn't that I didn't manage our time better. I would be curious, someone listening to this, how would they manage their boss, Bishop, from hell, in a way that would be productive? Like, what does that even mean? What is surviving and making your way through that look like?
Well, I think one of the big things is that we think that the other person is the problem, and that there may be some elements of truth to that, but there's not a bishop on the planet. I think there's not a boss on the planet who is trying to do a bad job. I don't think there's anybody, at least generally speaking, who's trying to make everybody's life miserable. I think they're doing the best that they can with the knowledge that they have. Bishops are not, there's no college course on Bishop 101. There's many times the jobs that I've had, bosses many times are promoted from within. And so there's not a course or a curriculum that helps them learn how to lead people. And same thing with the bishop or with any other leadership position, whether it's in the church or outside. And so number one is an awareness that they're doing the best that they can, and their best may not be as good as my best, and their best may not be very good. And so cutting them some slack can go a long way. Another thing that I've seen is that we're not good at communicating.
Yeah.
And so I'll go home to my wife and talk about how bad my boss is, but I don't go to my boss and say, you know what, you've done these things that really don't work for me. I had a boss one time, her method was threats and intimidation.
Yeah, right? There you go. Get it done or else, Ken.
We're the same age and I'm more educated than she is. I'm not going to respond to threats and intimidation like maybe my teenage kids would. And so having those kinds of conversations, and they're tough conversations, but having those conversations to maybe even say, hey, this is what motivates me, or this is how you can get results from me. And the way that you're doing it is not, it's just rubbing me the wrong way. It's not going to work for me. So I think there's some tips. I can't change your boss.
Or Bishop.
I can't change my boss. I can change me and the way that I interact with myself. And then the way that I interact with my boss can change the dynamic in big ways.
Yeah, I think so often, especially when we look at this through a church lens, but I think it works as an employment lens as well, we get scared of the confrontation, right? I think most people are kind of anti-confrontation. I know I am. I will go to great lengths to avoid confrontation, where it's like, no, I'll just suffer silently and my work will, or whatever, right? We'll suffer, right? All those kind of things. How do we do that? Hey, I just wanted to take a minute to speak with you. I think you're horrible at what you do. This really affects me, is not the way that you're talking about it. How would someone have a conversation like, say, with the bishop that, you know, you're really going after this way. I know that you don't get paid for this and it's a sacrifice for your family, but this is really a thing that, you know, like how do you even approach that?
I think there are a couple things that can help out. One is setting the stage, just like you would with, if you were having a difficult conversation with your wife, you're not going to just blindside her.
And then I'm teasing.
I know that's not how you talk to her, but set the stage. Hey, Richie, I need to talk to you about a couple of things. It's going to be a difficult conversation. You have some time, or should we schedule some time when it's more convenient, where we have 10 or 15 minutes that we can talk? And so that sets the stage. You're able to set some time aside so that there aren't going to be interruptions, but you've also set the stage with the boss or with the bishop or with somebody else that this is not going to be comfortable maybe. And so I remember sitting in my boss's office many times where I feel like I've got a message I need to share, and it is not going to be an easy message for me to deliver, and certainly not for him to hear, because he may be defensive. He may disagree with what I say. Mm-hmm. And so coming at it with the I perspective, this is me. I don't respond well when you're looking over my shoulder. I don't respond well when you say or do this. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And then there was another thought that just slipped my mind, but I may come back to it. So, and then giving some space for that to sink in. And I think part of the conversation can include follow-ups that, by the way, when we talked about this last week, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate how you've changed in the way that you asked me to do things or the way that you've interacted with me. We've got a lot of bishops, for example, that are they really want to do things the right way. They really want to follow the handbook. And sometimes by following the handbook, they're missing the mark on some things.
Sure.
And so they don't know unless somebody tells them. And a lot of people are not going to tell him. They're just going to start whispering behind his back. And so, Bishop, this is a hard conversation for me to have, but it really rubs me the wrong way. And keep it personal rather than it rubs everybody else in the congregation the wrong way. It really rubs me the wrong way when you say, for example, I've interviewed so-and-so and found them worthy, because you don't announce that the Relief Society president is worthy when she's sustained. Mm. Why are you saying that the Elders Quorum president is worthy? Mm-hmm. And so it could be something as simple as that. But the thing that I've discovered is that as I'm sitting in the chair, feeling all of the anxiety, knowing I've got this message, it's going to be uncomfortable for me to say and for him to hear. As soon as I start talking, that I've kind of crossed that barrier, and it's like the floodgates can now open up. I can have the conversation and keep it objective, keep it impersonal. It's not you are an idiot, you're a jerk. It's I feel frustrated when I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think that's great. Okay, I think good. For a lot of people, they're like, boy, I don't know that I could ever do that. I always just feel there's some sort of part of me that I'm like, yeah, that guy's doing the best he can. And he didn't ask to do this. So right. At the point that I go, would you mind doing this differently? If it were me, I'd be like, you want to do this? Would you like to do this?
You can also find an ally, find somebody who feels the same way and convince them to do it.
Yeah.
You go have the conversation.
Let me share this with you. Yeah, that is bad, right? Okay, go tell him. There are three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall. You know that. I'll ask those of you now. The first question is do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I have several callings. I am a stake sign language interpreter.
Okay.
I am a stake temple family history consultant.
Okay.
And I am best calling in the world, Elders Quorum instructor.
There it is. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I would just have to say chocolate cake minister.
There it is.
I can shake chocolate cake around the world.
How many would you have to do a day or a week as the chocolate cake minister? What does that look like?
I would just say enough.
Enough.
So I made cakes a couple of days ago and took some into FedEx where I used to work and shared with them. And I sent one to my sister-in-law for her birthday I just like having enough so that if somebody comes over and says, which has happened, do you have any extra cakes? Yeah, I've got extra cakes here.
All right. Now I'm dreaming of cake. Dreaming of cake. The last question that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall, we ask you to interpret it however you may. But the question remains, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I love how personal and individual our faith can be. And as I've talked to my sister many times, shout out to Annette, as we've done the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast, and we talk about, we had the same parents growing up, and we had largely the same social environment, but our experiences have been so different and so uniquely personal. She has gotten different hard than I've gotten and different easy than I've gotten, and we've both benefited in unique ways from our own experience. I love that the gospel, the spirit, the promptings, the experiences that we have are so uniquely personal that we get exactly what we need to bless our own lives.
Yeah, pretty impactful. I love it. Not only the connection part of it, which is something I'm trying now that I know I'm going to die in this house, not today, I hope, but that I'm going to be in this area a long time to really make the connections to try and, think beyond myself and my wife and be able to see, in the way that I can be able to, share God's love with other people. A great conversation. All the links to things like if you want Ken to be your life coach, you can find that in the show notes, as well as the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. You can find a link to that and everything that he does. So make sure you check that out if you are someone that needs that. And he'll walk you through surviving the bishop from hack.
Sure.
Do that. He'll do that. He would gladly walk alongside that. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you will be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, Chris at Alpine Lakes Travel, Rick McGee, Debbie Wanless, Chocolate Cake Bites Podcast, and the Tiger with a U will be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.